From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So since it's nearly 60 years old, I'm going to assume here you know Janet Leigh's character in the film Psycho dies, gets slashed to death in a shower, and it's become one of the most iconic moments in cinema history. But think about how an audience in 1960 may have reacted. Alexander Philippe's documentary explains the reason that scene was so shocking is because Hitchcock went back on the agreement directors used to have with an audience.
Of course she's going to survive the movie. It's Janet Leigh. Instead, she takes a shower. Out of nowhere, she's murdered by an old lady who I can't even see. What the f*** is going on here?
Today in the program, we're rounding out our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival, exploring the craft and influence of the Psycho shower scene. After the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Alfred Hitchcock only scheduled a month to shoot his classic film, Psycho, but he set aside one full week just for the shower scene. This is the moment you know full well where the character Marion Crane, who had stolen $40,000 and was on the run, is stabbed to death by Norman Bates, who's dressed in his dead mother's clothes. Alexander Philippe's documentary, premiering at the Sundance Film Festival this year, is the first feature-length film that explores this scene, the craft of it, the context of its time, its influence on audiences and cinema. As the film points out, there had been violence in movies before, but nothing like Hitchcock's shower scene, nothing that intimate and remorseless. Philippe interviews directors and actors and editors, writers, scholars, to explain how the scene worked and why it was so important to Hitchcock, who saw it as a prank, as a reprimand, as a way of getting out of his comfort zone, and a liberation of his own repressed desires. We're back in Park City today in the studios of community radio station KPCW to talk about the film. It's called 78/52. That's the number of setups for the shower scene, 78. There were 52 cuts. Alexander Philippe directed the film, and he is joining us here in the studio. There's a screening later today in Park City. We'll give you more details about that as we go along. Alexander Philippe, welcome. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much.
I guess I want to begin with your own relationship to this scene. Do you remember when you first saw the shower scene, when you first saw Psycho?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think what I should really tell you about is my relationship with Hitchcock, which, you know, started when I was about 10 years old. I've been really obsessed with him. And at the age of about 12, I was raised in Switzerland in Geneva, and I used to host these weekly, salons, if you want to call them that, with my parents and their friends.
Wow.
And we, you know, I'd show a Hitchcock film on VHS. Just do a little intro, and we'd have a discussion Q&A sort of afterwards. So it feels like it's always been part of my DNA. You know, Hitchcock, I've grown up with his films. Of course, we did Psycho, we did Shadow of a Doubt, we did Vertigo, we did all those. And so interestingly enough, I don't actually remember the very first time that I watched Psycho. To me, it really feels like it's always been a part of my life.
Why do you figure people are – because you talk to plenty of people who, let's be honest, are kind of obsessed with this scene.
Yes.
Why do you figure, just like on a basic level?
Well, on a basic level, it opened a Pandora's box. Hmm. I think in cinema, in culture, it revealed a lot of things, a lot of fears. And it profoundly changed our medium and profoundly changed the way that we watch movies. I think for me, it is the moment that changed the course of world cinema in the most profound ways. It is the single most important 2 minutes in the history of movies.
I want to break down why that is, because that's what
this
film is about, of course.
Right.
Let me ask you, though, about the process. There were some sort of – I won't call them recreations, although there sort of were.
Mm-hmm.
You the interviews you did in scenes that were designed to look like the set from Psycho. Talk about that, about that style of the documentary.
Yeah, so I really wanted to create this illusion that the action of the film actually was taking place there. That in a way that all of our interviewees were trapped inside the Bates house and the Bates motel, as it were. And, you know, we went to great lengths to do this. We actually shot all their exteriors at the, you know, at the Bates motel on the Universal lot with, you know, rain machines and 1957 Ford and all of that. And built a set to create the you know, the interior. Actually, the interior of the house that was shot at a Victorian mansion in Denver, an existing you know, location. So every interview was actually shot over green screen, and we, you know, composited all the backgrounds. So there's a lot of heavy lifting visually for this documentary. And as you said, you know, the whole idea is that they're actually watching Psycho. You know, you probably have noticed that this amazing 1951 porthole Zenith television, which, you know, the circular sort of motif, which, you know, of the drain and the eye and the toilet bowl and all of that. So I really wanted to sort of riff on that, on that idea. And and because voyeurism is such an important theme or motif again in Psycho, this idea that, you know, we're watching the film, but the interviewees are also watching us. You know, the A camera angle, they're looking into the camera. They're watching Psycho. Psycho is watching them. The pictures of the birds on the walls are also watching them. And so there's this kind of voyeuristic feast.
Well put.
Yeah, thank you.
The film points out early on that real care and time, as I sort of mentioned in that introduction, that Hitchcock took with the, with this scene. 7 days to shoot it.
Right.
Put that in perspective. Like 4 weeks they have, and he is going to spend that much time on this scene that I know he must have thought wasn't going to be much longer than 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody did it before. Nobody has done it since. And, you know, as Richard Stanley, who is in the film, also says, you know, you're lucky if you get one day to kill someone.
Right.
In movies, you know, today it's an extraordinary luxury. And the reason why he was able to do it and to afford it was because he, you know, funded the film almost single-handedly. Clearly he had something in mind. Clearly he knew, you know, that he had something on his hands there, you know.
Here in this moment from the film, the writer Brett Easton Ellis and the screenwriter Lee Winnell talk about how Hitchcock had something new and different in mind.
Hitchcock thought to film this murder separately from the rest of the movie, which meant in a way that murder was now going to be an acceptable part of entertainment. There was violence in American films, but nothing like Psycho, nothing that intimate, nothing that designed, nothing that kind of remorseless.
I think he knew what he had on his hands, and he probably felt like the whole film hinged on that moment, this crucible moment.
So talk about that, if you would. Do we know if he intended for this moment to be as groundbreaking as it turned out to be? Do you know?
Well, you know, we can never know for sure, especially with Hitch, because he is such a prankster.
Right.
You know, I mean, when he talks about Psycho as a practical joke, I think to some extent he's telling the truth, but to some extent, you know, I don't believe him when he says, you know, that Psycho has no meaning. To me, Psycho is actually the purest expression of his, you know, view of life. This idea that, you know, you could just be having a great day and just die the next for no good reason. That in a way there is no God, I think, for Hitchcock, you know? And so I think it's very profound on that level.
Can I play that moment, actually, where Hitchcock talks about this being a prank?
Yeah, of course.
Because it raises another question for me that I wanted to ask about you, who has been processing this film.
Right.
Right? Like, are you taking it too seriously? Are we all taking this too seriously? Here's Alfred Hitchcock.
I once made a movie, rather tongue-in-cheek, called Psycho.
Yes,
and it was a big joke, you know. And I was horrified to find that some people took it seriously. It was intended to cause people to scream and yell and so forth, but no more than the screaming and yelling on the switchback railway.
Do you think that's right? Do you think he was horrified to think that people took it so seriously? Because, man, people really took it seriously.
No, I think he was just totally toying with people, you know, when he said that. I think that's what he wanted. I mean, look, you know, Hitchcock is, certainly for my money, the greatest craftsman in the history of movies. You know, this is somebody who put more thought into every single element in his films than any other filmmaker that I can think of, you know, and this is why he is the most written about, talked about, studied filmmaker of all time and will continue to be. I mean, I'm not joking when I say that, you know, I've studied now this scene, just the scene, for 3 years, and I feel like I'm just starting to get to it. I mean, I'm starting to scratch the surface of it. There will be more projects from me about the scene.
Good.
And I don't know if there will be books. I don't know if there will be more movies. But
you're just getting started.
Well, yeah, because it is bottomless. I mean, it is like going down the drain.
Right.
You know, there's no bottom there.
Yeah.
There's no bottom because it's utter brilliance, you know.
The screenwriter Steven Rubello says that Hitchcock was in the film. He says this. He says that he was trying to get out of his comfort zone.
Mm, yeah.
And in some ways, that's what the film is about. Talk a little bit about that. That Hitchcock was trying to get out of a rut or something?
No. I mean, he definitely was not in a rut. I mean, he just came out of North by Northwest,
exactly.
Which, you know, although Vertigo, you know, it should be said, you know, that came out in 1958 was so far ahead of its time that, you know, it actually was kind of panned at the time. But, you know, he had just, you know, released a number of very, very successful films. And again, North by Northwest was kind of the peak of that.
Yeah.
This is a guy who had nothing to prove. You know, he was 61 years old. You know, it's just imagining, like, you know, some of our top directors in their 60s, you know, coming up with their absolute masterpiece and groundbreaking films and just taking the risk to go ahead and fund it and say, I'm going to do this thing that nobody expects me to do. To me, what it shows is that this is a filmmaker who constantly wanted to stretch his art. But if you also look at the way that his movies talk to each other, you know, and I have examples from, you know, movies from, you know, The Lodger to Rear Window to, I mean, God knows, you know, how many, I don't know, you know, there's just so many,
right.
where you can start seeing elements of the shower scene.
Yeah.
And I feel like he was building up to this. I think Hitchcock was constantly thinking about what is going to be my greatest trick.
Yeah.
How am I going to really, truly, in the purest way through what he called pure cinema, be able to pull the rug from beneath the feet of my audience in a way that they cannot see coming? And the shower scene is it. It's the greatest pure cinema moment, I think, of his career.
There is one of the things the film does is look at Psycho and the shower scene and sort of in the context of Hitchcock's sense that people were being naive, sort of what you were saying before. People were being naive about the danger in the world.
Right.
And it's something you show in his films in the 1940s, you know, not long after World War II. Here's the scholar and professor Marco Calavita in the film. We'll also hear scenes from some of Hitchcock's films, Foreign Correspondent, I think, Shadow of Doubt, Lifeboat as well. There's a lot of good scenes from the film.
The sudden violence of the shower scene in Psycho was meaningful to him for reasons that dated back, you know, 20 years to the origins of World War II. Hitchcock thought that the UK and the United States were insufficiently prepared for the dangers and horrors of World War II. There were several moments in his movies that spoke to that.
You can hear the bombs falling on the streets and the homes. Don't tune me out. Hang on a while. This is a big story and you're part of it. It's too late to do anything here now except stand in the dark and let them come.
What's the matter with us? We not only let the Nazi do our rowing for us, but our thinking. Ye gods and little fishes.
One of them was Shadow of a Doubt, only about a year and a half after Pearl Harbor, set in Santa Rosa in California. You can see how in that movie he's kind of chastising this town for being naive.
You live in a dream. You're a sleepwalker, blind. How do you know what the world is like? Do you know the world is a foul sty? Do you know if you ripped the fronts off houses, you'd find swine?
He was basically saying, America, you were way too naive. You think you're safe in your shower at home with, you know, your family and loved ones nearby? No, you're not. Sorry.
So I love that idea that he is a couple of things that I really like that you reveal in the film. We see him working this out. You know, like if the shower scene is sort of the culmination, as you say, in those scenes from the other films, we see Hitchcock working this out, which is really interesting.
That's right.
It's also really interesting that we're being prepared for the fact that, look, it's the most safe. You would think that would be the most safe place the world, in a shower. And he disrupts that entirely.
Yeah, I mean, it's as you said. I think it's like the series of warnings, right? And then suddenly he goes, "Wake up!"
Yeah.
And the only way you're gonna get that reaction to get people to wake up is to freak them out, as you said, in this safe, very safe place, the safest place possible. You know, as Marco Calavita, who was just a wonderful interview, you know, also said, you know, the Soviets are not going to come in your bathroom, but, you know, mother sure is with a butcher knife.
Alexander Philippe is with us. His film is called 7852. It's in the midnight category at this year's Sundance Film Festival. There's a screening today at 3:30 at the Redstone Cinema in Park City, another on Saturday at the Tower Theater in Salt Lake City. You can get links and more information on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a quick break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking with film director Alexander Philippe about the most iconic scene in the history of cinema, the shower scene from Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 film Psycho. Philippe has a feature-length documentary premiering at Sundance this year, which is equal parts love letter and equal parts analysis of the scene. He explores it in the context of the film, but also its time with American society on the brink of upheaval. The film is called 7852. There were 78 setups for the scene, 52 cuts. Philippe is joining us in the studios of community radio station KPCW in Park City. I guess we should point out that, and this is something I hadn't realized, Hitchcock, the American people knew who Hitchcock was, not just from his films, but he appeared on their TV screens.
That's right.
Sunday nights.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he was your sort of, you know, cheeky uncle who would show up and tell you these dark, you know, bedtime stories. And yeah, I mean, that, I think that familiarity is really crucial also to understand, you know, the impact of that scene.
Well, you know, Calavita says in the anybody else may not have been able to make Psycho and pull that off.
Well, in fact, Michael Powell did that with Peeping Tom, and he failed. I mean, I don't think he failed. I think that the reaction wasn't at all the same thing for you know, those reasons. I also think that comparing Peeping Tom to Psycho...
We should mention this film came out the same year as Psycho.
Yeah, just a couple months apart. I mean, they were just very, very close release. But, you know, the character in Peeping Tom is really, truly creepy in a way that is not relatable at all. Yeah. Norman Bates, and I think that is really, truly one of the miracles of the film, is that, you know, you care for this guy. He is so deeply troubled and messed up, but, you know, you really, really care for him, and you want to know what's going to happen to him, you know.
Talk about, as the film explores, what was happening in 1959, 1960, as the film is made and released. There was something in the air, and this was kind of a time of transition.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, and I don't know how many spoilers I want to give because I really think that that's, you know, something that, to me, that's one of the gems from, you know, Marco Calavita in the film, is sort of setting it in context of all these little things that were happening at the time in 1959 that created this absolute sort of cultural perfect storm for the shower scene to be the phenomenon that it was. Culturally, there was something happening. You know, yeah. We were, you know, I think this idea that the safety of the 50s was already in a way gone. But people were, I think, you know, sort of holding on to that illusion. Mm-hmm. But they knew, I think profoundly deep down, they knew. And I think when Psycho came and did what it did to them, that reaction to me proves that, you know, it ushered in a new era, yeah. Essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about something you explore in the film, how Psycho this was really interesting to me, and I hadn't realized this, that Psycho changed the way movies were experienced, the way they were screened. Here's another moment from the film. We're going to hear the director, Peter Bogdanovich, who's great.
Oh, yeah.
Like in everything. But also the great Walter Murch, the editor. We'll also hear Hitchcock himself, among others.
Well, I was on the critics list in New York for reviewer. The press was all invited to the theater the day it opened at 10 or 10:30 in the morning with the first performance. As you went in, Hitchcock's voice was blaring on loudspeakers saying, "Nobody will be allowed in after the picture starts, and please don't reveal the ending."
Before Psycho, you know, movies for as a form of entertainment were relatively disposable.
There was a tremendous, compared to today, a tremendous coming and going in movie theaters. And Hitchcock brilliantly said, "We don't want anyone coming in after the beginning of this film." It changed the way films are exhibited.
The reason was because the leading lady, Janet Leigh, was killed off a third of the way through. And I didn't want people whispering to each other, "When is Janet Leigh coming on?"
I love that you show some of the signs that Hitchcock had put outside of the theater.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is such a great idea. It was so important, not just the craft of it, but the way people experienced it. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I don't think we can understand today how profoundly different the experience is versus what it was at the time. This idea that, you know, people would just walk in the middle of a film and, you know, watch the end, stay, you know, watch the beginning and then walk at the point where they had entered, you know. It's just, it's really changed the ritual of movie going. In a very profound way as well,
yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, and you can absolutely say that it is because of the shower scene. It's not just Psycho; it's the shower scene. Imagine, right? If people walked in to the middle of the shower scene, you know, how can that movie possibly have the same impact?
No, not at all, because the as somebody mentions in the film, that whole first third of the is kind of a ruse just to get you to that point.
Oh, absolutely. It is designed for it. And to me, that is, you know, that is Hitchcock's, you know, purest expression actually of what he calls suspense. Yeah. But in the sense that, and I don't think he's ever actually done that, he never did that up to this point, of giving you these subliminal clues so that you don't know it's coming, right? And Hitchcock's his whole thing was always about the bomb under the table. You have to show the bomb. You have to let people know that it's here to create suspense. Psycho is a more refined form of suspense. He doesn't show you the bomb, but he makes you feel that the bomb is in this room somehow.
Yeah.
So that when it happens, it is, sure, unexpected, but it is inevitable at the same time.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Perkins, Anthony Perkins' nephew?
Osgood Perkins, his son, yes.
Son, forgive me.
Yes.
Anthony Perkins.
And a great director, too, by the way. Yeah.
He's great in the film, and he is the one who talks about how that setup, that moment where Janet Leigh is making her way along the road, it's raining like crazy.
Yeah.
And the windshield wipers are slashing
That's
the
right.
rain. All all as sort of a foreshadowing.
Absolutely.
Of the violence that's to come. And I think that's a really important insight.
Well, and beyond that, you know, there's things that I'm starting to discover as well, the more you look at it. But, you know, we have the, of course, the double jump cut when she turns around to her open mouth, right? We go close up, extreme close up, extreme, extreme close up. If you watch the driving scene in the rain, there's a moment when we go from a medium shot to the slashing of the wipers, to a close-up, to the slashing of the wipers, to an extreme close-up.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. You know, it's, yeah.
I wonder, one of the things that also comes up in the film that I wanted to ask you about
mm-hmm.
was, and this is the film director, Karen Kusama,
mm-hmm.
who talks about how we now, today, if you think about like Game of Thrones or any number of movies.
Walking Dead. Right.
Where the director or the producers kill off a main character early on.
Mm-hmm.
Like now that's sort of a thing. But that wasn't a thing in the day. And
it was
like a really critical moment. And it was shocking.
I mean, it's so interesting to me that, you know, here we are. And like as you said, in very recent years, it's become very trendy to do that. Right. Hitchcock was basically 60 years ahead of his time.
Yeah.
You know, that's how, you know, now we're catching on to this cool trick that really works.
Yeah.
And we're, of course, we're starting to overdo it now.
Yeah. Absolutely. As we do everything.
Yeah, right? Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
I also liked the commentary, how this was also about those little towns.
Oh, yes.
Out of the way. Once the interstate highway system was put into place, you know, all those little hotels,
that's right,
all those little diners really fell by the wayside. And I hadn't realized Psycho in some way as a commentary about them.
That's again, goes back to this idea of the changing America, you know? I mean, Chris Innes, who is the Oscar winning editor of The Hurt Locker, who's also in the film. She gave me actually not one but two wonderful interviews. She did a phenomenal interview, and then she called me later and she said, "You know, there's all these things I haven't thought of. You know, can we do it again?" I'm like, "Sure, let's do it again." So she was phenomenal, and when she went, you know, it was a monologue that she gave me really about you know, the, like you said, those you know, motels that started getting abandoned on those roads that were nobody, you know, that nobody used anymore.
Yeah.
It really profoundly moved me because now you're really starting to get into the themes of Psycho, and you look at Norman Bates and Marion Crane, and they're both very sad, very lonely souls.
Yeah.
And they connect in a very profound way. I mean, the parlor scene is one of the greatest scenes in the history of movies. You know, I would say probably very shortly after the shower scene itself, that parlor scene is one of the great moments. And it resonates so much once you've seen actually the film and seen the shower scene itself.
Yeah. I want to ask about the moment mm-hmm. in that parlor scene. You have the three guys from the production company, Spectre Vision, Elijah Wood, Daniel Noah, and Josh Waller. And they're watching that scene. And that moment, maybe you can talk a little bit about this, Alexander, where the scene kind of turns, where she suggests something about his mother. And it's a visual moment, but we're seeing Elijah and Daniel and Josh like reacting to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you can look at, I would say, probably that moment when she starts talking about his mother as the turning point. You know, as Daniel Noah says in the film, maybe this is where he decides to, you know, to kill her. But also, you know, I think the way that there's so many sort of mirror images and mirrors are very important in Psycho as well. But, you know, the way that Marion is really torn about her decision, you can see how torn Norman is about what he's about to do. And, you know, is he mother at that point? Is he part mother? Is he part Norman? Is he sort of struggling with those two personalities at that point? Because there is a part of him that wants to save her, you know? So, it's so complex, you know, what is going on. And, you know, those are moments that have no dialogue at all. It's the just exceptional acting. I think those are two of the greatest performances that we've ever had.
Wouldn't it be better if you put her someplace?
You mean an institution? A madhouse?
Look how still he is. Whereas before, he was fidgety and moving around, suddenly he became very still.
Maybe that's the moment he decided to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's super confident now.
Yeah. Look at him. He's barely moving his head. Just his eyes.
Wow. Oh, he's so angry. And she just got terrified.
Yeah. Oh, you're not going back to your room already?
Perhaps I'll go back to my room now. Norman, it's been lovely to chat. Terribly sorry about your loneliness.
How racy was this film?
Oh,
time.
Well, I mean, name it taboo, and it broke it, you know. I mean, first toilet flushing in the history of movies, first belly button in the history of movies, first time you saw a major movie star lying horizontally on a bed in her underwear. He really pushed it. And it's so fascinating to me to look at the memos from the Hayes office prior to...
Which you include in the film. They're fascinating.
Yeah. And, you know, before he started shooting the scene, I mean, they basically told him, you know, look, Hitch, this is just not going to fly. You're not going to be able to shoot that scene as is. Not only did he do it, but he told them you didn't see the things you thought you saw.
Right.
And he didn't change a frame.
Yeah.
And
he got away with it.
And he got away with it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, to me, you know, the best way that I can talk about Hitchcock is I think he is this perfect hybrid between Houdini and P.T. Barnum. You know,
yeah.
That's Hitch for me right there.
There's some sort of Jedi warrior mind trick that he's playing on
too,
right? I mean, you're
totally.
A Star Wars geek, so you get that reference, of
course.
Oh,
yeah. It's like, yeah, you will accept the scene as it is.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to talk about another really fascinating section of the film where we see the painting that Norman Bates removes to reveal that peephole that he uses to look in on Marion Crane and others. And you really work through this image and explain what that painting that he moves aside is about. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, again, I'll try not to reveal too much, but the painting is a very particular version of Susanna and the Elders, which is a biblical tale. That version was painted by Francis Mieris in the 1700s. And, you know, we interviewed... wonderful art historian, actually, from the Denver Art Museum to discuss this. And I had him really study up on this because I really wanted to get to the bottom of this. The thing that's absolutely fascinating to me is the fact that, you know, throughout art history, since medieval times, you can see hundreds of different versions of Susanna and the Elders, and you see how it evolves picturally and emotionally throughout the ages.
Now, this is a woman who is nude, being basically accosted by these old men.
Watched first.
Watched, of course. That's important.
Yes, and then essentially assaulted and basically blackmailed by them, ultimately. So the theme of voyeurism, the thing of bathing and being watched, is right there. I mean, it is a voyeuristic painting that Norman Bates removes to become the voyeur to look in on the shower scene. And, you know, this is something you can miss because, that painting is seen very, very briefly. And then there's a whole backstory with that painting. I actually contacted the museum. That painting was actually stolen, that particular painting. Wow. That's something I want to explore, too. I want to get to the bottom of that, too, at some point. I just, that was a little too... of the track to, for this particular film.
Are we going to give away too much if we play just a moment of Timothy?
Go for it.
He's the art curator.
Yeah.
Who you feature in the film. Here's another moment.
The interesting thing about the painting is that you've got full frontal nudity of Susanna, and yet the two elders are not simply looking at her, they're actually groping and violating her. It's almost a rape scene that's taking place before our eyes. It's an amazing painting that he picked. It's not any old Baroque painting. It's voyeurism. He removes the voyeuristic painting to become the voyeur looking in on the shower. He could have picked from 50 different examples, but he chose this one because it had the most amount of information that he could use for his film.
Voyeurism is a really crucial point, I think, for this film. And it's interesting because various people throughout the film talk about the fact that I guess in some way Hitchcock is implicating us in this voyeurism too, right?
Absolutely.
We're implicated. We're gazing.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, the point of view of a fly that we are made to be the voyeur of this, you know, post-coital scene. So from the get-go, it's on us. And what's amazing is that we're not just the voyeur, but we're also the victim. Because when we're in the shower, he stabs us. We have a number of point of view shots where the knife is breaking the water and coming at us as well. So he punishes us for being the voyeurs, you know.
That was really interesting to me, this idea of us being implicated in these sins.
Yeah.
And Hitchcock's moral view, his moral point of view, is really interesting. Let me play another moment here from the film. As one of the scholar puts it, Marion she decides, as we see, she's stolen this money. But at some point she decides she's going to take back the money, suffer the consequences. And Guillermo del Toro, the great director who you interview, says this is a significant point.
Right.
Here's another moment from the film.
I stepped into a private trap back there, and I'd like to go back and try to pull myself out of it. Before it's too late for me, too.
This is very important. It's very important narratively because it doesn't come in the middle of a heist or in the middle of the robbery or as she is escaping with the money on the road.
And it turns out, bang, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference because the universe doesn't give a shit.
And I think that is a true sign of his Catholicism and his sense of doom about a sin that cannot be washed away, literally, with water. You know, it cannot be purged except by blood and violence and paying the price.
You want to say something more about the sort of Hitchcock's quote-unquote Catholic point of view, his moral viewpoint in the film, because this is something that we see when she steps into the shower and takes on the water. And it's a kind of – she has this look of satisfaction and joy. And it's something you explore in the film. It's like the only look of satisfaction, the only time she may actually be happy in the film.
It's a baptism as well of sorts, you know, and it's it's also – that to me is the tragedy of Psycho, that this woman made a very human mistake for very human reasons. She was in love. And she's very – you know, I mean, she's very tortured about it. You know, she hesitates a great deal when she's packing her suitcase to, you know, to take that money. She knows she's doing something she shouldn't be doing. But, you know, she's also wrestling with this idea, you know, she's driving and she can hear, you know, the Texan, you know, who's a guy who clearly doesn't need that money. It's just pocket change for him. And he's just such an awful guy that, you know, she, in a way, she's trying to justify her act. Mm-hmm. But it is through that encounter with Norman, you know, there's this wonderful line, you know, when she says, yeah, you know, I want to go back to Phoenix before it's too late for me too. And it's you can see that she realizes this is somebody who had also a choice somewhere down the road and who took that wrong turn. She realizes that she took the wrong turn, but she wants to go back. The fact that she is stabbed to death after making that decision is utterly heartbreaking.
What do you make of that? It's like Hitchcock's not going to – I think that's his worldview. Yes, you're trying to – redeem yourself, but that's not always how the world works.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think it's a very realistic sort of, you know, way to look at things in a way. But it's also, again, it's like it's also part being a prankster. In movies, you just don't do that. You know, once the character makes the right quote unquote decision or wants to make amends, you can't possibly kill that character. So therefore, you couldn't possibly imagine that something like this would happen, you know. I mean, it's crazy. It's just there's so many layers. You know, I lose myself in it because you can look at that scene in so many possible ways. I feel like it's really going to take a lifetime to try to really understand it. Hmm.
Alexander Philippe is with us. His film is 7852. It's showing in the midnight category at this year's Sundance Film Festival. You can find links and more information about the screenings on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another quick break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with Alexander Philippe. We're talking about his documentary film, 7852, which is premiering at this year's Sundance Film Festival. He's joining us in the studios of community radio station KPCW in Park City. One of the elements that I really love, we were referring to it earlier, is how you have the subjects watching the film, or at least this scene, and like them really glued to the scene and breaking it down for us. Mm-hmm. There's one moment where one of the people watching it was actually eating popcorn. Like, did you provide popcorn?
So to be specific, and I'm glad you caught that. So this was Osgood Perkins,
yeah,
and he's eating candy corn because Norman Bates, his father.
Wow.
Well, Anthony Perkins, his father,
sure,
not Norman Bates, his
of
father,
course.
was, of course, eating candy corn during Psycho. So that was a little homage. And I asked, I was going to say, would you be cool with that? And he was totally game. So it's a nice little touch.
Yeah. It's really great hearing Walter Murch, as I said, the great film editor, break down the shower scene. I just want to play another moment here. It's difficult to do this on radio, obviously, to talk about
right.
the visual elements of the film.
Yeah.
But let me play Murch talking about a particular moment which shows the scene did not follow the storyboard presentation. Let me just play this so people get a sense of it.
Sure.
And we can talk about it.
There's nothing unusual about the pacing here. It's at a rather leisurely 4.5 seconds per cut on average. So it's a calm before the storm, let's say. Now here's what I would call a strange cut, what I call the wet hair cut, which is her washing herself with her head tilted back, and then it suddenly cuts to the same kind of an angle, really a jump cut, except now her hair is completely wet. This would give the lie to somebody who said this scene was shot exactly as the storyboards were done, because you never would storyboard a moment like that.
I really like that part because it's Walter Murch.
Right.
Right,
yeah.
Breaking it down, showing it to us. I had never noticed elements of that before. I'm not sure. I'd be honest with you. I don't think I've noticed the wet haircut part.
I think that's a very Walter Murch thing to notice. I mean, And, you know, this is why I think that this has to be an ongoing project, because every time I interview somebody, they will show me something that I had never considered, never thought about. You know, Walter was it was so special. We actually interviewed him at his, you know, blueberry farm in Bolinas, California. Mm-hmm. And when I, you know, walked in, I mean, I that's as starstruck as I would get. Like, this guy is might as well be God. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And I walked in, the door was half open. You know, so I peek in, and there he was on his couch. You know, he was on his laptop, and he had created this list. He had broken down the scene, you know, shot by shot, and he gave me that, and he said, "This is what I want to talk about." You know, and the wet haircut was there. You know, and there were all these amazing sort of things that we discussed. That's why I personally do what I do. You know, this is the kind of stuff that. It's so humbling and so exciting to be able to talk to people at that level of the game about, you know, moments in cinema that I'm just so passionate about.
And we should point out Bernard Herrmann, the music, that iconic sort of music sting, that music cue. say something about the influence that has.
It seems
so powerful. I didn't realize that it wasn't just Hitchcock taking that music and sort of, you know, I mean, it's played an influence in the way that scene was edited, it seems.
Well, you know, Joseph Stefano, the screenwriter of Psycho, has this wonderful line. He said, you know, when he heard it for the first time, he said, "Oh, I understand what he's doing. He took people's guts and made music with it." You know, and I mean, it is closer to sound design, really, than it is to music. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's also, again, all these sort of different layers, because you have the scream from Janet Leigh, the strings are screaming, you have the screams from the audience, you have all these different layers of screams. And it was so radical at the time and so influential that, you know, I don't know how many movies have riffed on that since then and still to this day.
Yeah. It's so terrific the way you break down... And the various people in the film break down that moment when she dies. Mm. And we see that image of the water turning round the drain, transforms into her dead eye.
Yep.
And this is where, as Bret Easton Ellis says in the film, everything changes. And I wanted to play this moment because it's so interesting that he says, as we'll hear, the rest of the film never achieves that kind of poetry. It's almost like Hitchcock is spent at that point.
Yeah.
Let me play this moment.
This was made by an auteur filmmaker, and that is a very personal stamp. It's a rupture in the movie, but the movie never achieves this kind of poetry again. And you begin to realize that, oh, this was what really mattered most to Hitchcock.
Do you think that's right? I'd never thought of that. This was the moment that he had, in many ways, had been building toward in even all of his other work. And then he got it.
Yeah. Well, and again, right, I mean, think about – and I don't think we can necessarily look at it as a way that, you know, after 40 minutes he was spent and he had nothing left to say. It's more that if that moment had come at the very end – it wouldn't be the same, would it? Like the whole sort of design of the trick is that it had to be at a moment when people would least expect it.
Yeah.
It is the high point of the film. I mean,
for sure.
It is the shower scene is what Psycho is about.
Right.
And once it's over, you basically are leaving your audience in the dust, and they're just, you know, watching the rest of the film still completely stunned. It never gets to that point again, but I think it still resonates. You know, as you watch it. Mm. Now I know it's an amazing trick.
Amazing. Talk about, finally, if you would, the influence of that scene. Richard Stanley, who's so funny and so great in the film, he says it's kind of the mother of the slasher genre.
Right.
This idea of, as he puts it, presenting murder as fine art.
Right. Right. I mean, it influenced a whole wave of filmmakers, you know, as Eli Roth actually talks about.
Yeah.
It influenced a lot of, you know, initially Italian filmmakers, you know, the giallo, you know, subgenre really sort of stems from Psycho, and then in turn it influenced a number of, you know, American slasher directors as well. You know, Halloween and all these movies, you know, followed suit. So, you know, and once again, you could certainly say it's been overdone. You know, interestingly enough, I'm not personally a huge fan of slasher films. It's probably, I love horror cinema, but it's my least favorite subgenre, because once you've seen Psycho, sure, Suspiria is pretty freaking great.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, but there's very few slashers that I really enjoy watching personally. You know, I think once you've seen Psycho, that's it. That's the apex.
Alexander Philippe, his film 7852 is showing in the midnight category at this year's Sundance Film Festival. There's going to be a screening today at 3:30 at the Redstone Cinema in Park City, another on Saturday at 6 o'clock at the Tower Theater in Salt Lake City. You can get that information by going to our website, radiowest.org. Alexander Philippe, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Larry Warren, Scott Matthews, and Bob Hendricks here at KPCW. Our intern is David Boyle, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.